Hello there, everybody. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. Another week in the books, and we are excited to bring you this episode. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode with U.S. soccer legend Marcelo Balboa. And we just keep rolling today. Now, we are brought to you by a couple really awesome sponsors. One of them happens to be Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F, Wolf Nation Apparel. It's an up-and-coming entrepreneur who's just putting out great clothing for men, women, children, and Wolf Nation stands for Wake Up, Live Free. Now, go check out wolfnation.rocks and check out the website and get an idea of some of the great clothing that Wolf Nation is ready to put out and put in your hands and on your body. You got to check them out, guys. They're just a really fun group to work with, and we are very happy to have them on the show. Wake up, live free. It's only a dream if you are not pursuing it. We are also brought to you by Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company that does trivia all over craft beer bars and breweries in New Jersey. You could be in last place, still win prizes. It's just a great night out. There's a bonus item every week for you to go check out on Facebook to get extra points. And I host at Tap House 15 from time to time. So come on out. It is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, we had a lot of fun on this week's episode, talking a lot of silly things and whatnot. We also, from Nashville, a up-and-coming hip-hop artist, a really interesting guy, really, really insightful into his music and the scene in Nashville and just hip-hop in itself. Today on the show, we're joined by rapper KB. So make sure you check him out, guys, and most of all, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is KB, and y'all listen to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, I mean, our shenanigans are cruel and tragic. Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, everybody, listeners around the world and the millions.
All around the world, statues crumble for me.
You were supposed to say and millions. We were supposed to do our, like, rock thing.
Well, I called it audible. I saw the defense, and I'm like, no, they're blitzing. Let's go for the screen pass. Let's do some Smash Mouth.
I was just going to say, so the screen pass is singing Smash Mouth, is what you're telling me.
Yeah. No. Well, you throw the screen, and all the linemen turn out, and they just smash them in the face.
Oh.
In their mouth.
I just want to spend one day in your brain. Just one day roaming around in there.
I'd like to give tours for there. You know. Now, people, don't stay with me. Don't get lost here.
Oh, don't go down. Don't go down that way.
Dog sounds. You don't want to do that.
Don't go down that way. You'll be looking at yourself in the mirror and having full conversations. Don't go down that door. Anyway,
on
folks,
your right, you will see a dog. Don't get too obsessed with this. We have an hour left in the tour.
Oh, on the left, you'll also see a dog. Oh, behind you, there's another dog. Essentially, this people, you're just going to have to ignore the dogs all the way through.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much what he thinks about 99% of the time and all.
Anyway, people, welcome back or welcome to either one, Verbal Shenanigans. I think we're episode 222, something like that. Just we're climbing. We are escalating. I remember episode 50 like it was yesterday.
Who was on?
I don't know, but we had a lot of shout outs. Like we did like a bunch of happy birthdays, like happy 50th episode. I don't remember if we even had a guest.
I don't think we had a guest. No. I don't think we relied on the guests to talk.
Yeah. We don't do that anymore. We completely rely on other people. So, guys, we're basically just introing another person is essentially what we're doing here.
Yeah, we just basically had a meeting and said, you know what our problem is? Banter.
You know, our problem is us.
Yeah.
So, anyway, welcome back to the show. Last week was a fun one. We had our good friend and pal, Marcelo Balboa, from the U.S. soccer team, from the Colorado Rapids, you know,
short time with the superstars of New York, now the Red Bulls,
the old Metro Stars. Yeah, so we had him on. We talked a lot of U.S. soccer and the evolution of the MLS, and it was just a good interview. It's always fun to have him on. It's actually part of three interviews we've done with him. So,
You just went to a game, I saw.
Yeah, I went last night. I went to the Red Bulls playoff game. It's kind of a last-minute thing. A couple buddies asked me to go. It was a good time. Red Bulls dominated. The key is for them, can they ever get over this hump? They seem to get here pretty often into the semifinals, close to the finals. It's just getting all the way through. It seems to be their problem.
Yeah, it's not going to be a tough journey. You know, the first game's in Atlanta, and that's a tough place to get some goals at. I mean, that's one of the few MLS stadiums that's a pure home field advantage. So,
Yeah. We'll see. The Rebels looked great yesterday, so... but yeah, it was a good time. A little cold out, but you know, it was. It's funny. Out of all the soccer games I've been to, I don't remember going to too many like cold weather games, like football style, like where it's like, you know, bundle up completely, like six layers of stuff. But that's what yesterday was.
But I went to one like that. I went on a whim. I went to the Union Stadium. It was my first time there, and God knows why. I just said, nah, no need to check the weather forecast. Mm-hmm. So it was probably about, I had like a very thin long sleeve shirt on, but it was kind of around, I would say 40 something, and their stadium's right by the river, so it felt like 30 something.
Yeah. So what sweatshirt did you have to buy from the from the stand?
I toughed it out, and no, I mean, I was shivering a bit. I'm like, No, I don't want to do it.
I thought you'd be like, well, you know, I didn't check the weather, and so I painted on the Union symbol on my chest, and I was on my way.
That actually makes me I remember one time I went to the dirt track down in Nuija because Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Martin Truex Jr. were supposed to race there. Once in a while, these NASCAR guys come to, like, the dirt tracks and the short tracks, and they do like a specialty race, and and of course when they get there, they announce, oh yeah, all of our owners and sponsors said we can't do this race, which really made everybody you paid very happy, just for them to come out, wave, and then go into some booth and nobody hear from them again. But I remember it was like a cold night, and I just said, all right, I'm too chilly, I under dressed for him, like, and I kind of did what you said. I went over, I got a sweatshirt, I think it was like 20 some odd dollars.
That's a deal in a stadium.
Yeah. And I go back to my seat, and my girlfriend at the time looked at me, and she's like, oh, you bought paraphernalia and you didn't buy me anything.
You son of a bitch. Did you buy two sweatshirts?
I'm trying to remember. I remember.
Did you, like, do the walk of shame and be like, I'll take another one?
Well, that's what, like, when she first said it, I just looked at, gave her the, you gotta be effing kidding me kind of looks, because I literally did, just for the fact I was freezing my butt off, and she had like a leather jacket on, and she wasn't hurt in any way. That was just like a pure power thing. But
did you?
In brutal honesty, I can't remember if I bought it or not.
Yeah.
I mean, I would flat out say I got whipped and I did it if I remember, but I just don't. I said, I'll marry you, Izzy. No.
Have you ever painted your chest for anything?
No, I've never painted my chest. I never did face paint.
I have.
Well, we'll get that in a second. Yeah, pretty much I just go in there with my paraphernalia,
my Redskins
stuff, my coat, my hat, but no, I've never gone to that level, but I got to hear the face paint, sorry.
Never did face paint. Did chest paint once in high school. We went to a USA soccer game. There was there was four of us, so I think I was the S. We had USA, and one kid was the exclamation point.
That's when you're like, oh, yeah, Jim is coming. Yeah. God, I thought we were only coming as three people. Damn.
I guess we're dipping into punctuation now.
Yeah. Then some other buddies show up. All right, you be the front star. You be the side star.
You be the periods. USA, we'll abbreviate it. Yeah.
Bill just held up a sign that says, "Yeah, we're out of letters. Sorry."
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, I was in high school, so I was just some dopey high school kid. But we were pretty into it. We thought it was fun. But I, in hindsight, I would never ever think of doing that again.
How long? Well, let's go over some stuff. How long did it take to put on paint?
I don't think very long. We did it in the parking lot, so it couldn't have been a great paint job. Like it was just kind of. Like, we bought the paint on the way there and just did it in the parking lot and walked in like that, I believe.
So you didn't come in there with a full plane. You just got the paint, and you're like, I guess we got to do this.
Yeah, I don't know if it was my suggestion, someone else's. I really have no idea. We're talking over basically 20 years ago.
Okay. Now, are we just painting the letter on it, or are you doing, like, paint as, like, the background and the letter S?
No, if I'm not mistaken, we did like a red letter and then like took the blue or the white, whatever color it was, and went around the outside of it, like just outlined it.
All right, so you put a little effort into it, but not like full body, I'm Blue Man Group kind of situation.
Yeah, no, we weren't, this wasn't like a big, gigantic operation. It was more of a... let's do this. And we probably looked like idiots. Most certainly looked like idiots. But it was against Jamaica. I do remember that. USA versus Jamaica. Long, long, long time ago.
Like when the Jamaican team was coming out, were you yelling at them, look at our chest.
Yeah.
Look what you're up against.
And they did.
Come get some Jamaican.
They did. They were scared. Several guys didn't start. It was, we did our job.
Yeah. From what I understand, Usain Bolt was supposed to be a rookie then, and he saw your guys... chest paint, and he's like, screw this, I'm going to track.
That's exactly undocumented, but that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, that's why he went to Australia. He's like, I know that redhead is not in Australia right now, so I could play soccer down there.
Right.
But we can't tour the U.S. in any way.
Yeah. Me and my buddy were just having this conversation. We were talking about having, like, fan paraphernalia, like with logos and things like that. What do you think the allowable amount of items you're allowed to have on? I'll tell you what we came up with, but let's, without looking like a maniac, like at your age, how many items do you wear to like a game?
It's generally two. It's generally, if it's cold, it's the coat. If it's warm, it's the T-shirt and a cap.
Okay.
That's what I generally go for.
All right. Yeah, we said two is allowable at a game. If you're at a game, you can go cap and shirt. Okay. In public, I'm thinking one's enough. One, just a cap, just a shirt. You don't want to be super fan in public, like in your everyday, like, oh, cool. You know, so we were saying that one's good, you know, Mets hat, Yankee hat, Philly hat, you know, but you combine it with the Philly shirt, you know, someone's going to say something, you know, hey, you're a Philly, it's going to cause some crappy conversation you don't want to have.
I mean, it's a tough call. I mean, I don't see two as over crazy. When you get into three, when you have like the Zumba team color pants.
Oh, the Zubas pants. Yeah.
Or, like the team socks or four layers of shirts, all of them your same team, that's going like too far. I think two is acceptable if it's not like crazy. Like if you're, for example, you can't go your team's crazy colors. You can't go Tampa Bay creamsicle four layers to like a public event.
I don't know, man. The older I get, even like the Giants game now, like I don't even wear a jersey anymore. I just wear like, I got like a long sleeve, like a... you know, like a thermal kind of shirt with just the Giants logo in the corner. And I'm like, this is good. I feel the older I'm getting, the more I'm not liking jerseys anymore. Like I used to, when I was a kid, I had a million hockey jerseys, loved hockey jerseys. Now I never wear them. Devil's jersey, every once in a while when I go to Devil's game, I never wear the jerseys like going out. Like I never like, oh, let me put on my Toronto Maple Leafs jersey from 1998. Like I never do it.
I was never into jerseys, and I kept on getting them as like birthday and Christmas gifts. So it's kind of like, all right, I gotta hold these out. And on, I have a man cave, I can hang up a couple of them on the wall. That's good decoration. But I mean, I will say, like when the when the lady got me the personal jersey with my name on it, at first I'm kind of like, I don't know. But I mean, I wear it from time to time. Like if I'm just get by myself for the game, I'm there. Maybe if I go to a game,
you're,
I might.
You're getting
wear
souped
it.
Up, you and the team.
Yeah.
You ready to be put in?
You know, it's like when I used to get ready for a stand up act.
Right.
Just like, start pacing and all. Big game today. Skin's going to need me. I got my jersey on. I got my chips and dips. I got my volume and I'm going to scream at the TV when they suck. Let's do this.
For those of you who don't know, when Mike did stand up, Mike had like a pre-show ritual, like very similar to like the way Ray Lewis came out of the tunnel. Like very like pumping himself up, like pacing back and forth. Like he looked like he was either going to tell jokes or like sack a quarterback. It was very fine line between the two.
Now I will say this was out of nerves, you know, because I was always nervous going into an act, so it wasn't like psyching myself out. I'm gonna be the best damn comedian that ever lived. They're gonna know what hit them when these jokes hit. They're almost going to be looking at each other like, how did I not see that?
When I tell this bus joke, this crowd is going to blow.
Like when you see like Uptown Comedy Jam or something like that, where you see the people in the audience get up from the seat and just start like dancing, laughing their ass off. That is every joke that's coming to them.
Now, speaking of decorations, I got to ask you, we got to address the situation here. Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed that your wife posted a picture of a Christmas tree about a week and a half ago.
Around November 2nd, the living room was fully decorated.
Now, how does that happen, in one? And two, how do you feel about this? Because we've talked on past episodes where you grew up with a mother who blasted you with Christmas music, correct?
And that's correct.
Drove you crazy. So now you've come full circle and it's back. So how does this make you feel? How did this happen? And is it driving you a little crazy?
Well, I mean, start with like the situation, like the woman, she I love her to death. She's a kid at heart. She absolutely loves Christmas. Keeping in mind, she's grew up Jewish, but she loves Christmas and everything. So she started bugging me literally as we were like a week before Halloween starting. Jeez. About, yeah, I want to get the stuff. Like she wanted to talk about like have all the spooky stuff outside and literally have the living room full of
welcome
Christmas
to the
stuff.
Home of holidays.
Look at the spooky Olaf from Frozen. He's a snowman. He's not supposed to talk.
Oh, on the right down there, the bathroom, it's St. Patrick's Day theme. If you go to the bedroom, it's Valentine's Day theme. And backyard, well, that's Arbor Day.
Yeah. Don't go in the attic. That's my erotic dreams.
Yeah.
It's my own personal holiday.
Right.
But basically what happened was, you know, I pushed off the sense of, all right, we got to get at least through Halloween before this starts.
And, right.
So Halloween happened, and you know, I want the weekend going into it, I'm like, you know what, just to make life easy, since I'm bringing all this stuff up to the attic, just to make my life simple and not have to worry about making multiple trips, brought all the Christmas stuff down. And she did all on her own. I didn't have to I helped her at least get the tree connected and string a couple of the lights on it, but she pretty much took care of the rest. And
now this is just hurtling right over Thanksgiving. This is, you know, taking the month of November away. Does it feel like it's cheapening the holiday? Like I feel like when I see those Christmas ads, or like it's like when you see back to school ads in June, you're like, oh my God, like can we enjoy the summer? When you see Halloween stuff out on September 1st, when you see Christmas stuff out on October in the stores, it almost makes you enraged. Like, can we just enjoy this time, this month, this time period before the insanity of Christmas starts?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest, I I mean, with everything up, it looks nice, and it's not affecting me like my childhood days. And I think it's for a couple reasons. Number one, the living room, we don't have a TV in there. So it's not like, hey, I want to watch the game, but I want to listen to Christmas carols. Nothing like that. I have rooms I can kind of escape to. Two, it's since it's a first home and you see it all dressed up, it's like, this is kind of cozy, you know. We started to actually get some fall weather down here. We're in the 40s and everything, so we can have hot cocoa and just kind of look at it. Number three,
you know, you could have
not blasting.
You could have had hot cocoa before. There wasn't a temperature limit.
Well, I guess it's just the ambiance of the room and
so
everything
festive.
About it.
So festive.
Yeah, and the third thing is she's not blasting Christmas music while I'm around. She like one night she played a little bit and I was fine with it, and we were just sitting on the couch just chilling as she was playing it. But it's not lyric like my mother did, which was week before Halloween to the week after New Year's of nonstop insanity. If you hummed a Christmas song in your shower, somehow she had the CD of it. Madness, that is her love for Christmas music.
Now, does your mom keep up with these practices to this day?
Right now, no, on the basis of they're at their summer home in Okeechobee, where it's small and everything. Now, with everybody moved out of my parents' house, and their plan is to move to a new house, where my dad's kind of satisfied. He was kind of grumpy because my mom wasn't thrilled about going to Florida, and it was cutting in on his Florida time. He loves it down there because he can play. When he comes back, he's got to do, like, work stuff or whatever. Now that they're going to go to another home and they're going to plan to come back to Georgia for the week of Christmas, that's when she'll start decorating and so forth. Now, granted, she's probably going to decorate before they leave, which is in September.
Oh.
So that will be an all-time record for Christmas decorations. But, I mean, there is a plan in there so she can go back to her norm. And all. It was a little bit of a sore spot being down there. It's a retirement home. It's not huge or anything like that. So you're not going to have tons of decorations out. Plus, everybody's like 80 and nobody's coming around. It's not like a bunch of kids are going, oh, look at the Christmas tree, blah, blah, blah. Their great grandchildren are too old for that stuff. So,
so your wife stepped up and filled the void that your mom was missing the season.
Well, she wanted to be just as bad. I taped it enough where we're at an agreement. This is the stuff I'm learning with marriage is like, all right, I will sacrifice this, but please keep in mind this, we're going to go by these couple rules to keep my sanity in check.
All right, well, enjoy your Christmas tree during Thanksgiving, and
well, I'll be in Okeechobee, so I won't have to worry about that.
Oh. Well, on that note, I think it is time to get to a guest here. All right, Berlo, we know how deep you are in the Southern rap game now that you are a Southerner.
Yeah. DJ Burles is getting a little ground down here, you know. I mean, they weren't sure at first, and then I just started spitting beats, you know, like I did a couple weeks ago with J Flo, and they're like, all right, this guy's for real. He's not
So you're spitting beats.
I'm spitting beats. I'm making rhymes. They're like, all right, this is finally what Georgia needed in their music community.
Well, I mean, I know that you're big down there. You're real big. You know, you're getting a grill. I know you're really planning a metamorphosis, if you will.
Yeah, thanks.
Now you might have some competition, or maybe you could do a collab. It depends. But we're gonna be talking to a guy by the name of KB, and he is a rapper out of Nashville, Berlo. So like, you could do a little Nashville versus Georgia kind of thing. Or like Nashville and Georgia can kind of get together and you guys can kind of rule the South.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got to bring the communities together in these times and days, Scott, so.
Well, you're in luck. Maybe you can propose that to him today on the show. So let's give KB a call.
Hello.
Hey, is this KB?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how's it going? It's Scott from Verbal Shenanigans. How are you?
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
Good, man. Hold on. Let me just merge in my co-host here. 1 second. Mike, you there?
I am.
All right. So, KB, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes here. Are we calling you in Nashville right now?
Yes, sir. Yeah, right in Nashville right now.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the Nashville hip hop scene.
All right.
You know, I'm in Jersey and Mike over there, he's in Georgia. But what is Nashville's like? What's its hip hop scene like? Were you able to? Did you have a lot of opportunity to be exposed in Nashville, or were you kind of part of a scene that's growing right now?
More the latter, I'd say. The scene itself has really just been kind of growing for the past maybe like 8 to 10 years. I mean, there's always been hip hop here, but the scene itself has really been just expanding the past few years. And I'd say that a lot of the opportunities for hip hop here have really just been kind of made by the community itself.
Right.
Thus far, at least. Yeah.
So we know different areas regionally have, you know, sometimes a sound or something we can kind of pick them out. And then, of course, we know that as time goes forward, things blend together or whatnot. But if we were to pick out Nashville hip hop, what would be like one or two things that, you know, would kind of give away or at least lead us to believe that that is from Nashville?
I'd say Southern lyricism is probably what I would say runs the most rampant through our sound. I mean, we have a lot of different sounds here. And I'd say that there are some artists that do gravitate maybe more towards a contemporary sound. But for the most part, I'd just say everybody's really lyrical. There's a lot of just storytelling and songwriting. I mean, not so poppy, I guess, is probably the better way to put it.
Gotcha. So tell us about your beginnings. And what was your musical background growing up? Were you more of a singer, songwriter, instrumental? What were you like as a kid?
Man, I've really been rapping since I was little, since I was about 5. I've always wanted to do it. I always just play around with it as a little kid. And then I started writing when I was about 9 and got like my first computer when I was 12 and started recording in a little dot on the monitor, you know. I've been doing it for forever. I'd say hip-hop is my number one love. Second love would be like new wave. I love like Depeche Mode and New Order and that kind of stuff. And then I also, you know, would put like Trent Reznor up there as an influence. So I've got that kind of in the background, but hip-hop's definitely my number one love. So
now you say you've been rapping since 9 years old. What the hell is a 9-year-old rapping about at that time?
Oh god, I don't know. It probably was I can stay up however late I want, you know,
serve my own milk.
right
I ain't picking up my clothes.
I have no idea, man. It's probably just, you know, a little, you know, childhood rebellion, you know. BS, you know.
So now as an up-and-coming rapper, you've been doing it for a long time, but your name's coming out. You have your second release coming out. Where do you find – how do you go about getting exposure nowadays? We talk to a lot of musicians on this show, and obviously you have your Spotify's and your streaming and whatnot, but how do you what's the go-to for building up a reputation or a name now? Like, whereas years and years ago, it was pushing mixtapes out, and then after that, it was MySpace and whatnot. And what is the way you are finding that works best?
I think content is king. I think that it's really about the work now, more so than ever. And I think that you really have to have an edge, whatever that edge is. But I really think it's content centric, you know. I think that, it spreads so thin now. I mean, Spotify is huge, you know, YouTube is, you know, the biggest. I mean, there's so many platforms, there's so many different social media platforms to advertise and blast out things on, you know. So the way to really, in my opinion, or what's working for me is to have something that's unique and to kind of have an edge of your own, you know. that's really the way to do it. And I think that's the way that it used to be, and that's probably the way it should be. But I think that it's just been getting adapted to the digital streaming, right, you know, era. Yeah.
When you were bringing up with your style, like, how long did you feel it took you before you felt you had your voice for your music? And how did you think you grew as you went along as now you're performing?
I think that I had it a long time ago, to be honest with you. I think I had it a long, long time ago. And then I think that I used to play with my voice a lot. I do a lot of just, I came up listening to a lot of ODB, you know. I always thought that he was like fucking amazing, you know. And I don't know, can I curse on, sorry?
Cool.
I came up on a lot of like ODB, and like I liked like Entertainers, I loved Busta Rhymes. So like I always would just like play around with my deliveries and play around my voice, and just play around with the pockets that a rap can lay. But I think that I took a little bit of a detour for a while, where people really wanted to hear me just go straight like bars and just like kind of be a little, just a little more focused on the pen.
Right.
I think that was fine, and it was probably a moment that I did have to experience. But I really just had to kind of step back from that and go, I kind of had it figured out from the beginning, and it was just kind of going right back to where I started, actually.
Yeah. Now, I would like to, we had the pleasure of having Gift of Gab on a couple months ago, or about a year ago.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he was awesome. And I really like talking to him about his early days and what names did, where does your name come from? And did you have any other like names you went by, or any rap names that you like look back and go, oh God, like what was I thinking at the time? Or have you always been KB?
Well, when I was little, I went by AK, like in high school and stuff. I went by AK, and it was a rap real fast and stuff. And
yeah.
It was, you know, kind of part of the whole thing.
Right.
And then people just kind of started calling me K for short, and K kind of stuck. And then I had a girl that I was kind of messing around with, and she started calling me KB, and I thought that kind of had a little ring to it. And I just kind of ran with it. I liked the way she said it. So I was like, okay, I could hear other people saying that.
Yeah.
And just kind of ran with it.
All right. So that's, I mean, AK, if AK is your worst, that's not bad at all. Some people got some, right. some AK people had some bad winners out there, man.
Oh, yeah, I know.
No, I always wanted to ask. Go ahead.
I think I had some bad AIM names, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I probably had those, but I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I was Lord Punk One. That was my cool name back then, huh? On AIM.
I was Beavis Burlew.
Beavis
Burlew.
Well, I think I was Shadow Cat. And that's from Carmen Sandiego, so I thought that.
He was killing the chat rooms as Shadow Cat.
Oh yeah.
No, I always wanted to ask, you know, you see music videos, and especially hip hop videos, it's very focused generally on the person or the guy, because you're, you know, most of the time solo, unless you're a rap group or have a DJ. Is it hard to transition from, you know, making the music in live, where it's a complete different vibe, to having the dude in front of the camera? Do you find that hard at all, or is it just part of it?
It's almost like, it's honestly, especially for this album and this video series we've been doing,
yep.
It's honestly been, it's like a whole different thing to fall in love with. And I've always really wanted to get into film, and I've always wanted to, I've written some screenplays and things like that just in my own time, you know. And I never really knew how I wanted to get into it, because I didn't really feel like I had the passion for actually like going into film. And then we just kind of, me and Nix, the guy who's been shooting the videos I've been working on, we started just kind of working together. And then I was like, oh shit, I can channel my love for film through this, you know,
right,
and come up with my own kind of form of a narrative. And yeah, honestly, they just kind of fell together. I mean, once we started on them, because it's a 6-part series, once we started getting, after we knocked out the first one, it was just kind of downhill from there. So really, I mean, for me, it's a blast. I love making videos.
Tell us about your like first couple of performances. Was it just seemed like natural going up there, or is it like almost like going up there like an open mic where you're a little nervous going up there and gotta wait for the crowd?
I'd say it's always been the same almost. It's like I'm always nervous just the moment like before I go out.
Right.
Like, the day of, the week before, anything like that, I'm good. Like it, I'm excited about it. And as soon as I get out there, I'm not nervous at all. But yeah, right before, it's like, you know, sweating bullets, you know, internally at least. But as soon as you get out there, it's fine. And at least for me, it's like an outlet. You know, I feel like it's a release, and it's like, okay, I can go to sleep now. You know, as soon as it's done.
Now, you know, starting up as a hip hop artist, what's the best exposure live? Like, is it getting attacked, like grabbing as an opener for someone, or is it, you know, amateur night? Like, what is the best way that you find was a way to get some exposure or get or even build your live, you know, performance, like get your chops down?
And the ideal performance, you know, obviously you want a good crowd and you want a crowd that's ready to listen, but at the same time, I think you kind of have to attack each performance like it's any of the other ones. I mean, you perform for one person like it's 10,000, you know, because as long as you can connect with one to two people, I mean, that's a fan made, you know. And even if it's not necessarily a fan made, they're going to tell somebody, I saw this dude and he was fucking doing this, that, and the third, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the way to, you know, spread by word of mouth. So I really don't think there's one kind of show. I mean, I think the open mics work. I think, you know, being an opener for a larger act works. I think doing your own showcases works, you know. It's really just whatever you're trying to do. But I think just doing it all and we're doing what makes sense with your brand. I think that people do need to maybe sometimes remember that it is a business, so you have to be brand conscious. But outside of that, I mean, I think you just do what feels best.
Now, I find it interesting, especially over, you know, the digital age, what I've noticed in hip-hop was, you know, when I was a kid in the, you know, the 90s and stuff, like, hip-hop live was it always seemed kind of muddy and a million guy. And through people like, you know, now having to make your money touring and live, the quality of live hip-hop has gotten outrageous with these guys bringing full bands and everything sounding wonderful. Like, what is, like your performance, like are you just a DJ and an MC? Like, what do you have on stage, and what are your goals as far as your live performance?
So as of right now, we have I guess it's five plus myself, so it's it's a live drummer.
Nice.
We run two synth guys. One of the synth guys plays some guitar, just because there's guitar textures throughout the whole album. Every song, even if you can't necessarily differentiate the guitar, there's a guitar in there somewhere. And we have Nate, who's one of the producers running tracks. He's the main producer, rather, Nate Zinson.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a bass player.
Nice.
And then myself. So, and all the guys played on the record too. So, yeah.
Awesome.
What would be your dream collaboration? A certain band, a group, a performer?
Oh, man. I mean, I'd love to work with, I'd love to work with Pete Rock. That's definitely a bucket list thing for me. I'd love to do a whole album with Pete Rock. I'd love to put Ghostface and Cameron on a song together.
That'd be awesome.
And I just let me do the hook. I'll be good. man, I'd love to pick Trent Reznor's brain. You know what I mean? He did a project for Saul Williams, back in 2009 or something, like a while back now. But there's some like hip hop type beats on there. And I was like, oh shit. Like I mean, Trent clearly has an ear for anything, you know? So, that would be another dream collab for sure.
So this is going to be your second album now. Tell us a little bit about it and what you feel you changed from your first album to the one coming up now, Era of the Tryhard.
The first album was just more of like a sample-based, like kind of boom-bap-inspired record, which is probably like my favorite kind of like hip-hop production. It was just a kind of record that I felt like needed to be made. And I feel like this album is kind of just the logical next step forward. And kind of just showing where hip hop came from and then where it can go, I guess. So yeah, I think it's just a foray into, you know, whatever that next chapter is.
So what's next for you here? Are you touring on the album? Are you so what's the tour look like? Where are you stopping? And obviously, where can people check you out?
We're working that out right now. We're working out spring dates right now. As of right now, the album is coming out in December.
Okay.
We've got a new video, third video in the series called What It Do, dropping this week. And then we've got a few follow-ups after that as well. But as soon as we get that, get the album out, we're going to be hitting the road as soon as the new year breaks. We don't have anything like that we can announce yet about that, but we definitely have it in the works.
Awesome. Now, being from Nashville, do you notice, you know, obviously like the country capital of the world, do you find a lot of country entering entering hip hop, or does it still kind of remain separate?
I find a lot of the country industry here seeking hip hop writers for country music. That happens quite a bit. Just that sort of sensibility, those sort of cadences.
Right.
They have a lot of hip hop producers. You know, you hear a lot of like hip hop drum patterns in modern country. So, to a certain extent, like the hip hop industry and country industry work hand in hand here. But as far as like actual hip hop music, not really. No.
Yeah.
But they definitely play off one another for sure.
With you coming up on the tour, what's the wildest tour story or on the road story that you could tell our fans about?
Oh man, let me think about.
What's the wildest one you would want to tell?
Right,
or you're allowed to tell?
Yeah. Last thing I can think of is having our bass player passed out. And this was last year. He was passed out, and it was in December, and it was like 11 degrees outside, and he'd just been drinking so much, and we couldn't get him to get up for shit. Wouldn't wait. He's like, I'm good. He kept saying, I'm good. And like, we're like, no, like, you're going to die out here. You will die. Like, it's 11 degrees. You're going to die. And like, he kept coming back like every 5 to 10 minutes. Finally, we got him up, you know. But that was, as far as what I can impart, that's probably the wildest, because it literally took us like over an hour to get this dude out of a 11 degree winter weather, you know. And we're in, like, I think we were in Wyoming at the time or something. We did the Northwest.
So, KB, thanks for coming on and giving us a little insight into your music and your career. If people want to go say hi or check your music out or whatever, where's the best place for them to go?
Man, you can go onto my website, kbmusic.com. All links are there. I'm on all the DSPs, so Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, Deezer, Napster, Amazon, whatever. I'm on all of them. Follow me on Twitter, @the_KB, @the_KABY, like baby with a K. And that's @the_KB on Twitter as well. You can find me as just KB on Facebook. Really just look up KB. I'm really the only one. So.
Awesome. I got one last question. Nashville, you don't think of it as like the pizza capital of the world, like, you know, with Jersey and New York. What is the pizza game like in Nashville?
Man, we got some good pizza. We got some pretty good pizza. We got Five Points Pizza is great. They competed in some pizza competition in Italy a couple of years ago.
All right.
And that was just select people from around the world. So, you know, so that was kind of cool.
Now, let me ask you, what are your feelings on pineapple on pizza? We've been having this debate. Now, I'm a fan.
I can't do it. I can't do it.
I'm starting to realize I'm just
like
a minority. I know.
In a row, man.
It started close. Like, it was like kind of back and forth. And then the last like 10 guests have definitely been all no. So I'm losing heavily here.
I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm a pepperoni guy. I like pepperoni and like leave it at that. I'm good.
Yep.
KB, thanks so much. Thanks so much for giving us a few minutes. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you all so much. I appreciate it.
No, Mike, I noticed you didn't ask him about a collaboration between MC Burles and KB. Oh, hold on, I lost you for a second. Hold on.
Understanding who he's talking to, you know, I wanted the interview to flow correctly. So, you know, when I see him on the road one of these days, I mean, you know who that was.
Oh, so then you're going to drop it on him live. You don't want to do it over the phone informally.
No. There's courtesy in the hip-hop world, Scott. You have to understand that. I know you're not part of it, but I'll let you in as much as I can.
You're going to be the first NASCAR-loving hip-hop artist out there. There's a market there.
Driving around with my snake milk.
I can see you spitting hot bars with your Ricky Rudd hat on.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, if anything, there's a market there because I guarantee it hasn't been entered by too many people.
Yeah. I'm sure there's not a reason for that. I'm fairly confident it's an open market that hasn't been tapped.
So. Yeah. Well, you know. There's still time.
Definitely is.
The Burles takes over the NASCAR circuit, the NASCAR hip-hop circuit. All the samples could be like car engines and stuff and crash sounds.
All I got to do is stick up three fingers and all, and everybody would be like, yeah, I love Dale. Yeah, this guy's great.
Number three in my heart. Number one on the track.
Absolutely, man. No. I'll let you in on a collaboration when it begins. That was pretty good.
All right.
You passed the audition.
No problem, man. You got it. I have no problem serving back up to the one and only DJ Burles?
DJ Burles. Or maybe I'll bring back Beavis Burlew, as we
Beavis
said earlier.
Beavis Burlew. That's brutal, man.
Yeah. BVS. It wasn't enough letters, so.
Beavis Burlew, man.
Yep.
And it's funny because you still every once in a while drop a Beavis and Butthead impression every once in a while. You get
once in a blue moon.
You get caught up on it.
It
like naturally comes out.
But I mean, God, it's been so long since it's been relevant, and I was hoping that reboot was going to go somewhere where I could have broke it out. But
you know, some things just got to die when they're done. You know, and when their time comes, it's over. You know, and then they just
They were saying, we don't need music videos anymore. We'll have them reality television. This is going to stick around for a while. Yeah.
Now, were you like, when they came out, were you like all in like one of those kids who had like the frog baseball shirts and stuff like that?
I
remember it was very controversial.
The thing I always remember about it was like I'm not sure I talked about it on the show or not, but I remember like my dad.
I remember your dad too.
He's never been one of those you can't do this or that on the basis of, oh, I heard something or whatever. But I just remember, like, one day he came home from work and he was just in a relatively very sour, very angry mood. And, like, he was very grumpy in the night. And, like, in the middle of, like, conversations, he's like, oh, and you can never watch Beavis and Butthead again. I heard something about it and I don't want you watching that stuff. And I was just looking, like, where did this come from kind of items? But the funniest thing is we laugh about it today. Since he only had one ear, I never stopped watching the damn thing. He couldn't hear Jack when he's falling asleep. So I'd hear him stir up, like he'd clear his throat or something, getting ready to go to the bathroom. And I was just hit the last channel button, go over to like PBS or something like that. Hey, Dad. Hey.
And
he takes his piss, goes to bed, and then I put it right back on.
And I bet you as a kid that makes you – you probably makes you want to watch it more just because you're told you weren't allowed to.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, I'm going to watch it.
It wasn't even like a good now I remember. It was the whole controversy with the fire. With Beavis. Fire.
Well, if you were my son, I would probably be concerned too that you're going to burn the house down.
Yeah. Well, I'd be concerned my dad was about 7 years younger than me, but.
Huh? Your dad was seven years younger than you?
No, if you.
It's a medical miracle.
Were... Marty, you screwed up the timeline. I told you not to have sex with your mother.
Well, anyway, we want an only KB. All right. The one and only KB. Mm. KB. Pretty interesting dude.
He was a really nice guy, and I'm looking forward to hearing his stuff a little more and wish him luck on his tour coming up.
Yeah, I mean, you might, like, being down there, you might be by the way it grass where it starts to spread, you know, before it gets to Jersey here.
See, I can fit in because I used to work at a KB Toys. So that will be my in having conversations with his fans.
Gotcha. KB Toys was always like the store, the mall, it was always like way more expensive than Toys R Us. It was like Sam Goody. Like you can go to like Best Buy or somewhere and get a CD for like $15, $14. You go to Sam Goody, it'd be like $23. You're like, God damn it.
Yeah, and they never had the selection either. It was like the offbeat brands. They didn't have all the board games would be stuff that you never heard of before, and plush toys of like some third string cartoon series that you never heard of. So
Monopoly with like two P's in the middle, like what? Something looks different here.
Don't pass gone.
So real quick, when we were talking about Halloween before, we were talking about the end of the season on Halloween. There's a guy that invites us over the last 2 years. He always had, it's his daughter's birthday on Halloween, so he always puts out like a big food spread, and they just have like a fire and beers and whatnot, and just outside while people are trick or treating. It's a good, you know, it's a cool little time. So, I can't remember. Okay. So, we're sitting there by the fire, and this guy comes. It looks like he's skateboarding towards us, but he's coming way too fast for it to be a normal skateboard.
Was it a hoverboard? Was it Marty McFly?
Well, now I have seen, you know, some motorized things over the years and some scooters and those Razor scooter hoverboards and things like that. But this guy was flying, like carving, and there's like a little light on it. So he pulls up to my friend Walter's house and he's like, "Hey, what's up?" And he's like, first up, he says, "Hey guys, this is, I can't remember if it was Hardcore Jim." He's like, "This is Hardcore Jim." I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "His name is Hardcore Jim?" And he
that
just showed up.
That is a great intro to Meet Your Neighbors.
Let me just make sure his name is Hardcore Jim. Hold on. Hey, man. Was he Hardcore Jim?
Scott, going to our reference documents here. His wife-to-be, Alex.
That was Hardcore Dave?
No, I didn't. Okay. So Hardcore Jim, it was confirmed, Hardcore Jim. So Hardcore Jim is not like, you're not picturing like, you might be picturing like some rugged guy. No, he looks like a nerdy like business guy, but he's like, "Oh, well," they're like, "That's Hardcore Jim." I'm like, "Okay."
That's kind of like those jobbers in the 80s of the WWF and all. Like, the Undertaker would face Hardcore Jim on Superstars, and Hardcore Jim would get his ass kicked.
So Hardcore Jim's hoverboard thingy is this skateboard. Basically, the deck is a little wider than a skateboard, but about the length of a skateboard. Yes. But in the middle, there's one wheel, okay? So one... Picture one large wheel, like a thick wheel, that is pretty much close to the width of the board. So it is, the wheel is really big.
And kind of like a scooter or something like
now,
that wheel?
Yeah. Now this guy is turning, carving like a snowboard. Like, and he's showing us, and we're like, "What the hell is that?" He's like, "Well, it's this thing I bought. You know, I paid a pretty penny for it. I forget what the name of the thing was." And he's showing us that he stands on it, right? And he stands on it, and if he looks to the right, like he just slightly looks to the right, all of a sudden the board starts moving to the right. If he looks to the left, the board starts moving to the left. And he's like carving on it. I'm like, "Wow, this is amazing." I'm like, can I like stand on it? So I stand on it, and I'm like wobbling like crazy. And it's like, you know, to first step on it, you have to like kind of like have like a almost like a leap of faith, because you got to like kind of get the board off both sides and balance it. But okay. it has like a balancing mechanism, like it kind of. But sure enough, you just like lean one way and it has like a light that goes one way and it starts moving. And then just look by looking the other way, it starts moving to the right. I mean, I couldn't really do it at all. I was just going like in the driveway a little bit, like left and right. But dude, this thing was ridiculous, like ridiculous, completely impractical. But this guy was going uphill. He was going like pinpoint control on this thing. It was like the hoverboard from Back to the Future.
I'm kind of wondering, and I was, as you were trying to use this vehicle, was he starting to chuckle and reference himself in the third person? Hardcore Jim Lynn struggled like you.
No, as great as that would be, Hardcore Jim did not talk in the third person. My friend Walter referred to him as Hardcore Jim. I guess Hardcore Jim drinks a lot, which
is always important when you're on some kind of scooter hoverboard that is very hard to control.
Well, maybe
the best thing to do is to get crunk.
Maybe that's why he has this skateboard, because he drank too much and cars aren't an option anymore for him, for Hardcore Jim.
Hardcore Jim had a drinking problem. Hardcore Jim doesn't have a driver's license anymore.
Hardcore Jim's still hardcore though, kids.
Needs Uber money.
So, dude, this thing blew my mind apart. Like, it was just like crazy. And he said he spent like, I think he said something like $3,500 on the thing or something crazy. But it was so sensitive to like any movement. He was going uphill. So he said he could go like 10 miles on it, like on a single charge. I was like, that's insane. Insane.
But I'm trying to figure out the scenario where I would want to go 10 miles on said vehicle.
You're not Hardcore Mike.
You want to. Like, you go out 6 miles, Hardcore Jim's going to have to walk with this thing.
Well, you're not Hardcore Mike, so you wouldn't understand the need to go 10 miles on your weird hoverboard.
Well, I'm the Burles. I mean, that's way better than Hardcore Jim. I mean, he can never get to that level.
Yeah, so, I mean, and you notice how I just completely don't even acknowledge that.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually called the Burles by K.T. Burke on his podcast.
I'm sorry. You probably asked him to call you that.
No, I hand to God, he willingly, without me saying a word, he was doing his live episode with Jackie Byrne on Halloween, and I forget the joke I made on the live stream, but he just started laughing. He's like, "Smell that, Burles," or something to that equivalent. Hand to God, swear to God.
Or I don't believe it. I don't want to believe it.
I don't care if you don't believe it. It's growing.
No, it's not. It's not growing. One person saying it does not mean a movement has started.
It only takes one step for a journey, Scott.
Yeah. At no point are like women across the world going to hashtag the Burles, like the Me Too movement. Like, it's not happening.
Burles across the world. It's like hands across the world. But even better, with a cool nickname.
The only way that would happen is like all the people you creeped out over the years are tagging. You know, one time I had this interaction with the Burles. Hashtag the Burles.
Is the defendant in the room? Yes. And can you point it out? Let the record show she is pointing to the person known as Michael Burlew, a.k.a. the Burles.
The person with the shirt that says the Burles on it.
I wore this just for court. So it's in public record.
You're fading in and out a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, your phone was like cutting in and out.
Yes. Sorry.
Maybe you're better.
Did we miss anything?
No.
I might have my hand, finger on the...
Oh, your finger on the pulse of the people?
Yep.
The
Burles Nation.
Yeah.
Let's continue.
So I had a week with Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I had three shows, all completely. Why does my microphone kick out for a second? Everything's falling apart here.
Everybody.
Yeah, there we go.
This thing is pure madness.
Yeah, so I had three shows, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all completely different shows. Now, Thursday was in a little like black box theater in Freehold, New Jersey. And that was kind of cool. It was fine. Audience was okay. But I performed with the headliner was 87 years old. A woman, 87 years old.
Is she famous? Is it a touring comic?
No.
Just a special occasion?
No, I don't think she's famous or anything like that. But, like, you know, like local headliner. Her name was Natalie Lafont. She comes in. She's like, she's got like glittery boots up to her knees, like a fur a sleeveless vest on. Her hair's like dyed red. And she was pretty good. She was a very sweet lady. But, God, man, 87 years old slinging jokes.
Yeah, if you're loving it, I mean, keep yourself young.
Yeah, so I did that. That show was like fine. Audience, like, you know, I'd give that set like a 6 out of 10. Nothing crazy, not terrible. On the plus side. All
right.
Saturday, I do a gig. I did a gig at a country club. It was like a fundraiser. Decent crowd. Another 6 out of 10. Whatever. But Saturday comes, and I have a VFW gig in where the hell was it? Marlton, New Jersey. Marlton, down by Cherry Hill. Okay.
Yep.
And for the as if you're not a comic, you could probably guess that a VFW gig has a certain look and feel to it. Every VFW has the same look and feel to it. So just a million people crammed into a tight space, like $2 Yinglings, like everybody just was definitely drinking for a long time beforehand. And I'm like, oh boy. So as I walk in, now I knew they'd have energy, okay? But we are in like Philadelphia Eagles, like Trump supporter section of New Jersey. Like you could just tell. Everybody there looked like they just finished duck hunting. Like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
A lot of beards, and that was just the women. A lot of beards, a lot of cut-off flannel, a lot of boots still on. Like, not your, like, classy comedy club type crowd, okay? So I'm hosting this gig, and I'm like, okay, here we go. So I go up, and I have a awesome set, like just one of my best in recent memory. Everything's good. They're laughing, they're participating, like, you know, and not even being obnoxious. They were just there to have a good time. I was like, all right, this is cool. So the show's going on, and I'm noticing the crowd's getting a little bit more rowdy, a little bit more drunk. And, you know, I'm in between, yeah, I'm hosting, so I'm bringing up comics in between. And the feature goes on, kills. Feature was awesome. Now, let me also set up some of the scenario. Now, there's no stage, okay? We are in front of a jukebox. The jukebox is behind us, and they just turned the jukebox around as if it wasn't
there. That's how sound works. If you turn the equipment around, you won't hear it.
And it was a giant jukebox, like one of the big ones. So it was like, you know, I even opened, like, one of the opening lines. I said, you know, some comics, man, they dream of performing in front of like 10,000 people. Well, I'm performing, you know, like in front of a jukebox. You know, like, this is it for me. So by the time the headliner went on, they were starting to get spent, and they were starting to get a little wild. So the headliner's on, and people are just calling out, yelling things. Like, I'm sitting in the back, standing in the back, and a woman comes up to me. I could see her coming out of the corner of my eye, and she's got that drunk stagger, like, just kind of like little, like, zombie-ish kind of walking towards you. I'm like, oh, God. She comes right into my face, like, super close, and is like, this guy's not funny. Why don't you guys go whack up? But I'm just like trying to ignore her. Like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, I'm not going to insult
her. I like how, you know, the people in the crowd think that like the MCs or the other comedians are in charge of the other comedians performing. And if they don't like them, we'll just go out there and go, you suck.
Yeah, yeah.
Get off my stage.
Yeah. Hold on. Your connection, Julie, but let's just reconnect. Probably.
All right.
I'll just hang up and call you back.
Any better?
Yes, much better. At least right there, anyway.
All right.
So, yeah, exactly. Like, I'm going to be like, okay, guys, let's push this guy off. I got another 25 minutes for you guys. So, The feature before the headliner had made a joke because you had to walk, of course, through a dance floor. There's a big gap. Now, guys, Comedy 101, there shouldn't be a giant gap in the floor, like between the audience and the comic, but there was, of course. So people had to walk through the dance floor to go to the bathroom from the other side of the room. So, like, he was joking with the crowd, like, oh, that guy's going to take a shit, like that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
classy stuff that works everywhere.
Yeah. So now people are going to the bathroom and coming out, and like two guys tried the same exact joke. They came out with like toilet paper and went right up to the headliner and like put it in his face. He's like, what the hell? And everyone's like, ha 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 ha. I'm like, oh my God. So that woman who staggered towards me, I see her start staggering back towards the headliner, like walking towards him. Literally walks to the headliner, goes right in his face, like this close, in the middle of the show while he's performing, and goes, "You ain't funny," like, and can be heard on the mic, and like everybody's like, "Oh, a boo," and starts like booing her. So things are getting out of control. She goes and sits down. Then about 5 minutes later, another guy goes walking towards the bathroom, steps in front of the headliner, and just pulls his ass out and just bends over.
Classic.
Yeah.
I mean, when we tell people about New Jersey, I think of the Wild Woods and Cherry Hill. That's the pure Jersey, you know. That's where the art museum goes.
Dude, so it's like, what the? So he literally like moons the headliner. People are just yelling things out, and the headliner just going on and on. And I'm like, dude, come on. Let's wrap this up. Like, let's go. Like,
yeah.
They're done. They're cooked. Like, let's go. So they're just, you know, just one of the rudest audiences after a while. Like, which kind of sucked because that show turned, because they went from like very, very, very fun to just like disaster. It's just like the victims of $2 Yingling and Jack Daniels.
The world's oldest brewery screws up their comedy tour.
So, and of course, it's just like I'm standing by the bar to try to bring the comic down, getting ready to go back on stage, and just the owner, like, that's my son right there. Like, that's his girlfriend. He met, like, loud as hell. I'm like, dude, shh, like, the comic's on. Like, it's cool, it's cool. Just everybody's blurting out. So finally the comic goes off, and I go up, and I'm just like, you guys are, insane. I'm like, you know, good luck, guys. Like, have fun. Like, be safe on your way home on whatever, like, bus is taking you back to the asylum you all came from. And I'm like, this is like an episode of The Walking Dead. Like, you have to, like, dodge audience members. I'm like, you guys are freaking nuts, man. And they're like, aha. And everybody just pouring out of there. Like, it was even hard to get out of the show because they're all coming up to you. Like, I'm like, yeah. I'm like, let's get the frick out of here, man. But God, it was just a story of three completely different shows this week. It was just.
But the key thing to that description is that was one of your best shows humanly possible. So I implore everybody who comes out to the next Verbal Shenanigans show. At Tap House 15, moon Scott.
Toilet paper in the face.
Come up to him with some toilet paper so everybody can laugh. Make sure you tell the comedians that they suck, because the most important thing about the show is you're a part of it, ladies and gentlemen.
That's
when we have 20 minutes thinking of the best stuff and playing off the crowd, we say to ourselves, I hope somebody comes up right in my face and have a conversation with us.
Yeah. So I was like, I wonder if like KB, a guy like a musician, up and coming musician, I wonder if they deal with that. They can't deal with it as intense as comics, right? Like where like people like try to shut them down. Like I guess music can kind of fade into the background, but for some reason, people when they get hammered think they are the comedy show.
Well, I think there's always a difference in music and comedy when it comes to like open mics and shows where. It just seems like no matter how bad they are at a music show, you can just be in your head, I'm just going to strum my stuff, I'm going to do my songs or whatever. They have to be like insanely overpowering booing to get you rattled. And comedy shows, 9 times out of 10, what rattles you more is the deafening quiet and all. I mean, it's,
right.
Even when they're that obnoxious, though, I don't recommend people getting that obnoxious. I guess... In the worst case scenario, you're like this is material for down the road or something like that. You can say, man, I ate a nut tonight, but hey, I got something for the next show, comparing things together.
Right. I agree with that, but I also think, like, I mean, that comes with the territory of, like, trying, you know, putting comedy in places that aren't used to having comedy. So when it's a yearly fundraiser, cramming into a bar that has TVs on, cramming it into the corner of a loud room, like, comedy, good comedy has to be done a certain way, you know, like, to really be successful. So these VFW gigs, yeah, they can be great, but they can just spin out of control really quickly. Because you don't have any security there. It's not like anybody's going to get thrown out. The comics are fed to the wolves, you know, like,
yeah.
So I think about, like, guys who have been doing this for a long, long time. Like, you know, luckily I had a good set. And, you know, like, I'm getting better through the years at dealing with, like, hecklers and annoying people. But, you know, what he was dealing with, I was thinking, like, could I, you know, if I was having a bad set, could I deal with what was going on? And I don't know. And I think of, like, comics, like, that I work with, like Mike Gaffney, who, very good comic, been around for a long time. He kills heck, like, people who would disturb his show. Like, blast them. I've seen it, like, on two occasions working with him. He does not put up with anything, and he sets the tone from the beginning. Whether you like him or not, he will make it known. If you are heckling, like, he will blast you. And it's just, I guess it's like a skill you acquire over time.
Well, I mean, I think it's the oldest adage of stand-up comedy, don't give a F.
Yeah,
don't give a crap or anything like that. I mean, I've listened to his podcast with Joe on our heads.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember him saying stories. He'd be in a set and he'd be in a good mood and some people start heckling and he'll just be like, you know what? You're getting my average material. I'm not breaking out new stuff. I'm not doing stuff that's to my heart. You're going to get the average stuff. I remember him telling the story how it's like some woman kept on saying stuff in between. He said that and then he would be going on with his set and she'd be like, dude, you can do your good stuff. You can do. We'll shut up and all. And he just be like, "Shut up! I'm just you getting what I'm giving you because you chose to freaking interrupt my show."
Yeah, yeah. And he
uses a tad more salty word.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the Jersey City comes right out of Mike Gaffney, you know. But you know, it's just funny. Like, you know, I guess I've been fully back at this 4 or 5 years or whatever the hell it's been, and it's funny how like. I see comedy performing, especially when I get into a groove of having a lot of shows and getting up a lot in a month. Like, the last 2 months have been kind of a little bit more slow. Now, this month's nice and busy. But you start to, like, call back on these, like, acquired skills. You're like, well, I've dealt with this before, so this is what works here, and this is what works here. And this, I can't imagine what the greats, they must just have backpacks, virtual backpacks full of tools that just can be brought out at any time. Like, okay, I've dealt with a heckler like this in 97 in San Francisco, and this worked. And they're just able to so smoothly come in and out of things like that. And you know, like,
I've heard different things. Like, some comedians, they just spend their time staring over all the audience members and building material in their head and all, whether it's a regular act where they play with the audience or, okay, if you're the one that speaks up, I'm going to talk about XYZ 1, 2, 3. And
right.
And just on the mood of some people, you know?
Yeah, and some people are just naturals when it comes to that, that are able to shut down somebody who have that in their personality. Like, I'm not going to take no shit kind of thing. Like I'm more of like a laid back. Like, I kind of have always avoided confrontation a lot in life. Like, when things, like, I knew things were going to happen, it's like I always try to, like, separate myself from that. So on stage, that's a skill that I have to try to, like, beef up, and I know that. Luckily, I haven't, like, bombed in a while where I've had to deal with hecklers and stuff. But, like, I was thinking, like, okay, I was in the same crowd 20 minutes before this guy was on, and he was, you know, he's really dealing with some tough stuff. I'm like, thank God I'm not dealing with that. And you feel bad. You know, you feel bad. You're like, ugh. But I guess that's what the headliner is paid to do, you know?
I mean,
I could have jumped off 4 minutes early and be like, all right, guys, you ready for your show? Whatever. you know.
Yeah, I mean, most headliners, they know they're paying me to be up here for X amount of minutes. I'm going to try to entertain them. If I'm not entertaining them, I'm just going to truck through. If you piss me off, I'm going to start swinging at you with my verbiage, you know, so.
Swinging at you with my verbiage.
Yeah, it's all in the territory with them. I mean, what can I say? You do it enough times. I mean, how many different assholes can you come across is the best answer.
I've seen on the internet a lot of assholes before.
Yeah, but I'm sure they have categories and all. It's like,
yeah, dark ones, all right, smooth
this is a
ones,
poor man asshole,
round
you know,
ones.
The guy who probably spent half his paycheck to go to this $20 show.
Yeah, no, I know. But you know, assholes will always surprise you. There'll always be a new evolved asshole that has just turned into a new breed of asshole that just keeps going.
I'd like to see that evolutionary chart of the evolution of the asshole. Yeah. I think we could learn something from it, you know.
It'll just be a chart of Italian guys through the years. Oh, I'm just kidding, Italians. Don't kill me. I guess it's time to put a bow on this one, right? And get the hell out of here.
I guess so.
Yeah. All right. Well, make sure you guys go check out KB and his album. Want to thank him for coming on and sharing some knowledge. Very cool interview. And really enjoyed him. Berlew, anything to promote before we get the hell out of here?
I guess I'll promote another podcast from Ken Krantz and former guest Ritu Chandra, the Why Bother podcast. They're two comedians, but Ken's a headliner. Ritu is getting up there, a lot of popularity. They do a podcast together. They do a lot of touring together, so check them out. It's Why Bother, WHYBOTHER. You can find them on Libsyn or any of your other podcast formats.
Beautiful. And I will take that time to promote not only them, but ourselves. There's a couple things you guys can do if you are enjoying what you hear. One, I think the best recommendation to do is just go back and listen to some of the old episodes, because our show is very guest-based, and we've had so many really amazing guests through the years. I've been talking about getting a website up. I know I said that for a while, but it will have the goal is to have an index of every guest that has been on. We've had some really cool ones. Even just recently, we've had a lot. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter and all that. You can find us easily. Just Google it. And I will promote it just to show. I'm on the 30th and the 1st of December, the 30th of November, 1st of December. I am at Wisecrackers in Allentown. I'm hosting both nights. Cool little club. So that's Allentown, Pennsylvania, for anybody that is somewhat near there. So with that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Love ya. Adios. Bye-bye.
See ya.
If a motherfucker get tracked down with a Mac Brown, lay it back down. I relax, sound real voice, silver bullet. If a motherfucker wanna crack down, wanna track round, stack sound, have a rack sound, in the glass now, chuck a jack down, like a flash tracker, like a screen now, me sound, like a grill, if they made me wood sound, roof, roof, like the top down, heard me pop out, like a cannonball, that sound, pow, pow, make me boom, pow, at the violin, strap down, making gag sounds in the air.